And welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 136. We are rocking.
Wait, well, we are 136 or 137?
137. Oh,
Jesus, Kieran.
Shit the bed. That's it. Redo. We're done. 137 today. If you didn't catch last episode, it was off schedule. I did get a couple of messages like, oh, this is a nice surprise. But it was off schedule episode a few days early. You're welcome. Just to capture the ride the media wave, if you will, about the whole Hannah Gracie thing. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, go back and listen to that episode. But today we are going to be tackling a bit of keeping up with the Kieran.
I told Kieran this episode is titled, which it probably won't be, because if you've noticed, for anyone who actually reads the copy and the titles and everything, they used to be very poorly done because they were, because they were done by, Kieran used to do them, and then I started doing them, which was a minuscule improvement, which I didn't think was an improvement, but Kieran would always be like, oh yeah, nice man, this is good, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Kieran now has done a little course or a few classes or something in essentially writing copy, and it's so now Kieran does the titles and the description, and it's so much better. So it probably won't be titled this, but I said to Kieran it should be called Post Canada Pre Sweden,
because that's gonna clickbait the shit out of it.
that's pretty much where we're at. We're going to be talking about Kieran's return from Canada, from his trip to, not Toronto, but outside of Toronto, to visit Jordan Teaches Jiu-Jitsu, and what went on there, as well as the fact that from the moment of recording, what day do you actually fly out?
I fly out on Monday.
So we're 6 days away from Kieran flying to Sweden. Yes. So this is going to be talking about the trip in Canada and the upcoming trip to Sweden, keeping up with Kieran.
Yeah, so I'm moving to Sweden for 12 months, and man, it is a pain in the ass. Like, yeah, I've got 6 days until we actually get on the plane, but I only have 2 days until we need to vacate the apartment and head up to Newcastle to drop my car off and everything like that, which is about 2 hours north of Sydney. For those that aren't from New South Wales, Australia, which is most of you. So, I've got so much shit to do. It's such a pain to, you know, organize everything, you know, sell my motorbike, pack everything up, sort out my equipment and everything like that. So,
it's been a journey. We'll dive more into that in the second half of the episode. But as Kieran was saying, last episode we touched a little bit on the unfortunate injury to Jack Greener, I believe his last name was, became paralyzed from a jiu-jitsu incident and was awarded $46 million in compensation, blah, blah, blah. Guys, if you are a bit unsure about that topic, I would advise going back and having a listen to it, because prior to us recording that episode, this is my honest opinion, prior to recording that episode, I had probably done as much research, self-education on the incident as I would say, you know, 80, 90% of people in jiu-jitsu have done. But then as we recorded the episode, turns out Kieran had gone balls deep on the research and had way more information, which, I don't know, left me feeling really nicely educated about it by the end of the episode. And then even, I haven't told you this, Kieran, even after that episode, I went and watched some other sort of clickbaity YouTube videos that all came out at the same time. One was from, I can't recall, but, you know, known people in the jiu-jitsu community, like big famous people. And watching their little video after having our chat, I was like, well, you clearly don't actually know the whole story, do you? You know, so anyway, this is a way of me saying that Kieran did a huge amount of research going into it and had, I think, way more details and information than probably most people have about the whole incident, you know. Yeah. So, I had Lucas, one of the white belts in our gym, say to me the other day, he's like, man, I listened to your episode. I was like, oh yeah. He was like, man, terrified me. I'm like, what do you mean? He was just like, man, then I was training, someone had a seatbelt and turtle, and I was just like,
don't worry about it, Lucas. No one would have No one will do that.
Because like I said to him as well, I said to Lucas, I was like, bro, even if I tried to do that technique and intentionally break your neck, it probably still wouldn't happen. Like it was a very, very freak accident. There's been horrific, malicious stuff done to people by absolute asswipes that have not resulted in injury. Like, very, very unfortunate freak accident.
Yeah, I have to agree. And to be honest with you, man, I think the reason that the takes are so one-sided is a couple of things. People don't like Henna Gracie. People see him as a sellout before this even came out. That's right. No one was surprised. Like with the whole flip thing and the Gracie University thing, people, you know, outside of the Gracie realm, and even some people inside of it, do not like Henna Gracie because they see him as a, you know, 90s salesman. So anytime there's any controversy revolving that man, people are going to pile on the opposite side. And also, people see this as a threat to their sport. People see this, oh, so what? If you get injured, you're just going to get sued? All the gyms are going to be closed down? That's how people view this. So people come into this sort of thing with their minds made up. They don't want to listen to the facts or understand or review. And I've had several conversations with people after we've actually recorded the episode, and even some with training partners, like at length, going back and forward, basically like, you know, or it was not like hitting my head against a wall, but, you know, not really being able to get each other's viewpoints across because there's so heavy of a bias going into it.
Yeah. I mean, he is pretty cringe.
Yeah, he is.
But I mean, I will say though, if you don't know a lot about Henna other than him being cringe, one thing you can't argue, in my opinion, is he has very, very good jiu-jitsu.
Oh, fuck.
He's very, very good at jiu-jitsu. It's sort of like, you know, hate on Gordon Ryan all you want, very good jiu-jitsu. Hate on, you know, like...
Undeniable.
Oh, yeah. Hulk and Kynan and all these people taking steroids or whatever. Hate on them.
Yeah.
They're still incredibly good at jiu-jitsu. So, I mean, Henna is very, very, very good at jiu-jitsu.
Speaking of, have you seen, because this dropped the day our episode came out, so it's really unfortunate.
With Mika.
Mika Galvao.
Yeah, man. Like, look, let's just quickly glance over this.
We have to.
Because, like, it came out, and when those five dudes got busted, like Cyborg, Wagner Hosher, were the two dudes in their 40s, and then the other three were all in their 20s.
Yep.
Right? And then Mika got, and I remember even when we talked about that, I was like, oh man, fucking, like, you know, I think the youngest dude was 24 or 26 or something, got busted. And I was like, you know, what can you do? You got 20-year-olds taking gear. And then, Mika Galvao, 19-year-old taking gear. I don't know a lot about the drug he got done with, but from my understanding, it's a drug you often take to bounce back from coming off of a cycle. Of steroids. Yes. That's all I know about it.
Yep.
He's playing the card of it being in a prescribed medication from his doctor and he didn't know and whatever, which is always the card played by every single athlete. Obviously, some of the times that would be the true real story. I'm sure that, you know, there's at least one person who's played that card that they've legitimately had that card and they were taking a medication for, you know, an infection and they didn't know, right? But
it can happen. Even some supplements can be tainted.
Yeah. But man, it's just when the news broke, it's not like I was surprised or anything. It also didn't make me like maybe less of a fan of Mika, but I mean, just cause I'm so anti this steroid movement, you know? Mm. But I still absolutely love his jiu-jitsu. I mean, other dudes who are more known as being Jack, like Andre Galvao, man, say what you want about him. He's incredibly technical and amazing instructor. I always publicly say that the Atos YouTube channel is one of the best YouTube channels for technique and stuff. Like, it's not only Galvao, but I mean, Andre's jiu-jitsu is incredibly technical. Like, so yeah, Mika's jiu-jitsu is still amazing, but the news broke and I was like, yes, I have enough of and a strong enough opinion about the steroid movement in jiu-jitsu that we could do another episode about it. But I was like, we can't do another episode about fucking steroids, bro. Jesus Christ.
We wouldn't be worth our salt if we didn't mention it. And fuck, dude, I spent a long time talking to people random, just, you know, people in the community about this whole thing. And to be honest with you, man, when I saw it, I was a bit surprised. Like, I wasn't. I get what you're saying, like, you weren't surprised, but I was a bit surprised. I didn't expect that from the younger guys, you know, from the likes of Mika. I put Mika in the same bucket as, like, the Rotolos in terms of their, you know, their ethics and their standpoint.
I also wouldn't be surprised if the Rotolos got done.
I'd be shocked. To be honest, man, I'd be very surprised.
Why? Like, I mean, you just look
because at... Because I just think that maybe I'm naive, and if they were on it, they would be the fucking, you know, really good actors. You know what I mean? But they're so vocal, stand out against it. They're so young. They don't, you know, I just don't know. But
they on the flip side, though, they both guys, Mika and the Rotolo brothers, both come from a very, very well-known steroid program gyms, you know?
Yes, like, I understand that. I get that. So when I saw the whole Mika Galvao thing, I saw him as an ambassador for young people in jiu-jitsu. I saw him as, you know, one of our very best. And to see not only that he has been taking gear, but that he, you know, instead of coming out and saying, look, I did it for ADCC, this drug was to cycle me off, you know, yada, yada. He's like, oh, my doctor gave it to me. I fucking hate that. I hate that he hasn't owned it. I hate that he hasn't taken extreme ownership, and he's using the weakest excuse in the book that his doctor gave it to him and he just took whatever his doctor gave him. He is a professional athlete. It's your job to understand what is and what isn't on the WADA ban list and the USADA ban list. Yeah. If you're competing at IBJJF Worlds, you win Worlds, and you're on you know, a post-cycle drug, then obviously, you're on a cycle for ADCC. That's clearly what happened. He was on a cycle for ADCC. This was a PCT routine, so a post-cycle treatment routine given to him by a medical professional. He got popped for it. And then he's like, oh, my doctor gave it to me. I didn't know. I think that's fucking bullshit.
It's a bit frustrating. Yeah. And I don't know, man. I'll just give my, again, because we've spoken about this so much, but I'll give you a recent conversation I had with a student who was like, essentially said, I don't care. I just want to see, from an entertainment standpoint, I just want to see two jacked, you know, superhumans competing at the top of their game. And I was like, look, I get what you're saying. Part of my opinion with steroids as a whole is there is part of me that is like, well, if you're willing to make that sacrifice to your life and your health, because my sort of, I'm not someone who lives by a mantra or a philosophy or whatever, but I definitely do subscribe to the thought, or at least the understanding in life, that you can't have it all, right? And nobody has it all, right? So, yeah, becoming a professional athlete usually requires sacrificing, you know, social life and going out partying and drinking, or becoming successful in business. You know, if we're talking high-end business, usually you sacrifice time with your family and being at kids' birthdays, and everything comes with a price. You can't have it all. You know, even I always give this example, like, is it healthy what professional ballerinas do to their feet and hips to succeed? No, man. Like, it's horrifically unhealthy. So, like, part of me subscribes to the thought of, like, hey, man, if you're willing to make the sacrifice because for you it's, you know, it's worth it, then I'm for it. But, like, you know, when he's like, I just want to see two big jack dudes compete because it's entertaining. I was like, yeah, but I mean, a lot of people also think cockfighting is entertaining, but it's not fucking.
We're talking about chickens, people. Chickens.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not moral, ethical. It's not right. And
the reason why it's illegal.
Yeah. And I said to him, I said, man, you only don't care because it doesn't at the moment directly affect you. And I said, what happens when, you know, let's fast forward 20, 30, 40 years. Like, what happens when your 15-year-old son, who has followed you and picked up jiu-jitsu as a hobby and wants to pursue it, and all of a sudden you catch your 15, 16, 17-year-old son taking anabolic steroids? Like, then are you going to care? And he's going to be telling you that he has to compete because the 19-year-old black belt world champions are on steroids. So he has to take steroids too. Like, the same thing as Tour de France, right? The same thing as professional bodybuilding. Like, you know, it gets to a point where you have to. Otherwise, you stand zero chance, right? And I'm like, then you'll probably start to care when it directly affects you, you know? And so that's why I'm so sort of anti it.
But I look, I do want to just mention this. I had a very interesting conversation with a guy, Josh Settelage. He's a jiu-jitsu strength and conditioning coach, very, very popular on Instagram.
The guy knows his shit. Is this the guy who am I thinking of someone else? Every one of his videos starts the same?
It's a good hook. It's jiu-jitsu athletes.
Yes, that guy. Yeah. He's a purple brown belt.
Yeah, he's a purple belt. Yeah. I don't know what level of wrestling, but he started with wrestling. He trained jiu-jitsu for a while. He's a purple belt. Very, very knowledgeable. I love his stuff. Go back and forth with him all the time. Not all the time, but you know what I mean. Anyway, so I spoke to him and, we went back and forth on voice message on Instagram, and he had a really interesting take on the whole situation. He's a lot more measured than my approach. You can tell we're pretty against it. Josh is like, not for it, not against it. You know what I mean? He's just more pragmatic. And, he mentioned a really interesting point that a lot of these jiu-jitsu guys at the top level, they're on anabolics, but they're using it as a crutch because this is my words, not his, but they're inherently lazy. They're not focusing on the everything else, right? So anabolics, you can take anabolics, and we've mentioned this before, you can take anabolics and look worse than my physique, and I'm natural, right? Because if you, you can. Shut up with your eyes. So there's people that are on anabolics and look worse and perform worse than me. And it's insane. And I'm not.
It's like what we said about myself, Nicky Rod, right? We said there's people who look better than him who are natural, and there's people who look worse than him and are on gear.
Exactly.
So him being clean is completely plausible.
Yeah. Of course you have genetics, but a lot of these jiu-jitsu guys aren't focusing on strength and conditioning outside of the gym. They're not working on their recovery. They're not getting adequate amounts of sleep. They don't give a fuck about their nutrition. Even Craig Jones semi-recently last year on the Joe Rogan podcast was asked about his training protocols. And he was like, I don't stretch. I don't really lift weights. And I don't really give a fuck about my nutrition. That was his that was his stance back then. This was pre-ADCC. During ADCC, the lead up to it, he worked with the fight dietitian and cleaned up his nutrition protocols. And then post-ADCC, he released the instructional in conjunction with the fight dietitian about his nutrition, which I find very ironic, but shout out to Craig. Still love Craig. Got to do what you got to do. The fight dietitian knows his shit, so I'm sure the instruction was brilliant. Anyway, I think Josh's take on it is very interesting. Like, he's pretty much on the standpoint. Like, these guys are just using it as a crutch, and it's similar to I think the analogy he used is the comparison between 70s bodybuilding to 90s bodybuilding. In the 70s, they look good and they're blasting gear, obviously not to the levels, but compare that to, today, where, they're blasting gear, but everything else is dialed in. So the gear becomes the 10%, if you will, on top. Maybe a little bit more than that, but regardless, I found his take interesting, and it's made me think on it, but still, I'm still against it in sport. I'm still against fucking PEDs in sport.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this before as well. Of course, we know there's no striking in jiu-jitsu, but it's still a combat sport. And I think we mentioned this probably when we're talking about the five dudes who got busted. In an interview, Mike Tyson was asked about it and about steroids. And he essentially said something along the lines of paraphrasing. He was like, he doesn't care if you're taking steroids in any sport, profession, whatever, unless it's in a combat sport. He goes, then motherfucker, you're pushing manslaughter, was something, paraphrasing, something like that.
I've heard this before.
And he's like taking a banned substance and when you think about it like that, you're taking an illegal substance to give you an edge in a sport in a combat sport. Okay, it doesn't have as much weight in jiu-jitsu, but let's rephrase it. We're talking about boxing or MMA. Mm-hmm. If you're taking a banned substance in a sport where the objective is to punch someone in the face as hard as possible to send an electrical signal to their brain or whatever that makes them fall unconscious, and you're taking a drug that makes you do that faster and stronger. And, like, I mean, when you kind of look at it like that,
it's cheating.
It's to think why, like, it's absurd to do it. Yeah, obviously, it doesn't, cheating. Like I said, doesn't have as much weight in grappling, but I mean, I don't know. Yeah. We could go back to last week's episode and let's talk, you know, with the whole injury and the guy becoming paralyzed. Well, what if someone, let's take a rule set that allows slamming. And what if I get my neck broken because I get picked up and slammed by some dude and they're on gear or something? I mean, like, where's the line? Like, can I then sue this dude? Even though we did a legal move, can I then sue him because he slammed me harder than he, you know, legally was able to do? I don't, you know what I mean? Yeah, you can see the messy cobweb,
like,
that I'm...
It's not clear cut either way. Like, it becomes very gray. So I think, you know... We spent longer than we intended on this, but I think the moral of it, my take on it is I'm disappointed to see this another incident happen. I'm disappointed.
He's not going to be he's not going to be the last either.
Oh no.
And I'm also not, you know, I don't know how much it costs to test people, but I imagine it is not cheap, and it's just, there's not enough. Even if we had Olympic level testing, people would still get through. Like, people, the same way people still make it through the Olympics without getting busted, right? I mean, people will still always find a way, or, you know, or some people will just roll the dice and not even cycle off and just hope they don't get tested, right? But yeah, it's not going to change without more rigorous testing. And I really, really would love to see the current, no rules organization in ADCC. I would really love to see them start testing. Like, I mean, it's got to come from the top down.
They won't. But
say what you will about IBJJF. Like, I mean, at least they do something. I mean, yeah, they only test the winner, or they only test the people who make the podium or whatever.
They've been successful lately.
But yeah.
Like, look at their track record this year.
But they test some people, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
we've had six very high profile positive tests this year, so they're doing something. They need to test all the way down, but yeah, anyway.
And I mean, UFC has quite a good testing regime, don't they?
Oh yeah, it would be hard to get through UFC. Some people do, but fuck, man, they throw a lot of money on it. You start, it knocks on your door at like 6 a.m, fight day. Like,
yeah, they get busted all the time, don't they?
Yep.
Speaking of UFC, I had like a, to close off the steroid chapter, I mean, segue in a different direction. I'm not much of a fan of trash talk, right? But anti-trash talk, as in having an epically good comeback to some other piece of shit trash talker. So most people would probably know that John Jones and DC, Daniel Cormier, had like a, you know, rivalry beef and don't necessarily like each other. And I saw this like reel popped up from one of their pre-match press conferences or something, and I believe it was when Daniel Cormier was still the champion, and he's dressed in a suit, John Jones is just, you know, whatever, tracksuit t-shirt, and man, it was the best comeback to someone trash talking you, because John Jones sat down and said to Daniel Cormier, he was like oh, you look like a crackhead in a suit. He's like, what's that? He's like I said you look like a crackhead wearing a suit. And then Daniel Cormier was like, I can look like a crackhead wearing a suit, but I've never been a crackhead like you. Jones was just like, bro, shat on so hard. And I was like, love it.
Those two, I remember all those press conferences. They're both pretty shit at trash talking. Yeah. So
yeah, and they don't really
get like awkward.
They don't particularly get cringe. Along, but anyway, all right. Moving on from that, let's go. So, I mean, we recorded an episode while you were in Canada. So we spoke a little bit about it. Let's give us a bit of a quick recap of what we went over, not in that episode, but just quickly recapping. You had gotten over there and bit of landed. You and Jordan had some rolls at 2 a.m, like, yeah. And then, but then you got a bit of a rib injury. You had a scheduled to do a bit of a little an MMA round with him, or whatever. Give us a rundown on how the rest of the trip went.
Yeah, so we did the MMA round, which is on YouTube. If you want to see me get punched in the head by Jordan multiple times, that was really interesting. I don't know if I spoke about MMA. I think we might have mentioned MMA. I can't remember, but shit, man, doing MMA versus just regular jiu-jitsu is so much different. Like MMA in a jiu-jitsu context, jiu-jitsu in an MMA context is so much different because you need to be aware of getting punched in the fucking head. You don't want to be on the bottom. Everything needs to be on top. So like guard pullers, MMA, nah, not going to happen. It's very rare that you see like people comfortable in guard and do well in MMA, particularly UFC. There are some, but yeah.
How did the MMA, I mean, I saw the video, but I mean, how did it, that's your first, have you done any striking before? Dude, or?
Fucking zero. No striking. Like maybe the last time I did striking was probably when I was a teenager throwing off boxing gloves, you know, at my mate's house, like fucking just swinging for the fences, you know, as you do. may not be drinking or whatever back in a past life. That's the last time I fucking even had gloves on. I've never even done like a boxing class or like a fucking, you know, hitting pads or any shit like that.
It's very different. Like you could see in the video. I mean, yeah, you could see. Obviously, Jordan's done like 6 or 7 amateur MMA fights. And
yeah, I think 7-0.
Yeah, does a bunch of striking and that, so... But yeah, if you're not used to striking, not even just striking as in pad work, that's one thing. But if you're not used to sparring in striking, even like you could see just in the way, like you kind of flinched and whatever. Yeah. And I'm not talking as an educated striker as well. I'm talking as someone who I did years of striking, but just on pads, right? Like I never sparred. So when it comes to sparring or an actual striking match, I'm saying this from a position of experience. Like the way you moved is how I move. Like, I mean, I'm very like,
at like, one point, know. I just like ducked my head and just started fucking swinging, like head down swinging. But, you know, for those that think, and this is ironic, this is the funny thing, right? And this is why a lot of people start jiu-jitsu for self-defense and everything like that. But for those that think that they'll be able to hold their own in stand-up because they train jiu-jitsu, you're fucking wrong. You won't. Your only chance is to get it to the ground and get it back into your realm. Like, if you're fighting someone with stand-up and you try and stand with them, you don't know what you're doing. Like,
your
jiu-jitsu is not going to help you in exchanging punches. But I think I did okay, considering it was my first time. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not a striking. I'm a fan of striking, but yeah, I don't like getting punched and kicked.
I didn't mind. I thought it was okay.
Yeah,
like, I caught some hard hits.
Head for me. I don't mind getting leg kicked. I mean, no one wants to be leg kicked,
hurts, man.
But I mean, it's not something that, like leg kicks or getting body kicked or hit or whatever. I just can't stop the flinchness. Mm-hmm. Even, I don't know. And I mean, maybe it's something I could train out of myself or experience, but even training jiu-jitsu, if things come too close to my eyes, I get really, you know, like, yeah. I mean, yeah. Atlas, if my son is climbing on me and his hands get like past my hairline and get to my forehead, I get really like, I don't like anything near my eyes. So
have you ever tried to put contact lenses in?
No, I've never needed contacts, but it's funny because I smoked pot for years. And I grew up in Byron Bay, which Australian people will know that's a, I don't know what the American or European. So Byron Bay would be the European equivalent of Amsterdam. Not at all in the sense that not the same things that go on. But, you know, if you said you're from Amsterdam, people would go like, oh, yeah, okay, you probably smoke weed. You know, Byron Bay, it's just kind of hippie town. Everyone smokes weed and whatever. But I grew up and my dad was a cop. So I grew up smoking weed and skateboarding. So I, for years... and to this day, have no problem putting in what we would call clear eyes, like eye drops that would take the redness out of your eyes. So I have no problem doing that for some reason. I guess I persevered because of the addiction to smoking weed that I overcame my fear of things near my eyes. But a contacts lens, no, I've never had to put contacts in.
If you're that sensitive, you would not be able to put them in at all. Like, yeah. They're hard to put in. I hate it. Anyway. So that's Canada. Yeah. So we sort of already went over it, last episode.
You'd only done a bit of training. Like, what was it like to you know, I've never personally met Jordan. We've spoken a few times.
He's a legend. Yeah, I love Jordan.
Yeah. So, but like, what was it like to do his classes? And, you know, we spoke a little bit about some differences in the way he teaches and I teach while you were in Canada. But, you know, like, did you learn any cool detail to a particular technique that you thought like, fuck yeah, man, that's a sick detail I didn't know? Or
I remember when we're in Canada, you were mentioning like, oh, whenever I go to different gyms or whatever, I always ask about, you know, the key details on a move that I like or something like that, just to learn it from a different perspective. So Jordan has a very savage head arm choke. And I got him to take me through it in detail. We spent probably like 10 minutes just looking at all the key details in a head arm choke. And yeah, I can safely say I think my head arm choke is a fucking lot better now. Not necessarily. It wasn't like crazy. Like, oh, I was doing it completely wrong. Everything that I had been doing, fundamentally was sound. It's just the small details and even like the different cues, like thinking about things slightly different way. Because, you know, you've said this before many times on the podcast where you'll be teaching a technique to someone and you'll use an analogy or a cue or just mention something and it'll click for someone for whatever reason, like they just really resonate with it. And it was the same for the head arm choke. So if I'll just go over
what, it. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What was the cue that for you clicked?
Here's the thing with the head arm choke, and correct me if I say some dumb shit that's wrong as a hashtag blue belt, but one of the most common mistakes I see people make with the head arm choke is they put their weight in the wrong direction. This is a tangent before I get into the key details. So a lot of the time when you have a head arm choke, right, the arm is across their neck, your bicep is on the other side of the neck. And you dismount to side control, for example. And a lot of people, say I have you on my right side, people will drop to their right hip. So they're facing away from you. If you do that, you're directing your weight in the wrong direction. You need to drop toward the person. So you need to drop to your left hip in this case. So your weight is driving through their shoulder. So I just want to get that out of the way. The key detail was the way he thinks about it, the way he explained it, is you need to focus on the arm, your arm that is on the side of their neck. You need to focus on your bicep on their neck, on their carotid artery. And to do that, you know, he brings them up to the side, which I've seen before, and stuffs the head, stuffs the shoulder in. If you haven't done that before, so you shoot your arm through, so your bicep is resting on their side of the neck, and with the same hand, you cup the back of their shoulder into their armpit, right? And from that grip, you can pull them up onto their side further. You can use your opposite hand to stuff their shoulder or tuck their head. And basically what you're doing is you're not necessarily trying to drive their shoulder across their neck as such. You are, but that's not the focus of doing this. The focus is to drive your bicep as deep as you can and get a really deep bite on their neck with your bicep. So the key is your bicep on their neck. Previously to having it gone through, for whatever reason, I've just associated, like, you know, done this myself in my mind, that the most important thing of this choke is they're getting their shoulder into their neck. And it's not, because you can put someone to sleep by cutting off just one side of their carotid artery. You don't need, like, obviously it helps to cut both, but you can put someone completely to sleep if you just cut one side. So the bicep on their neck is the most important. Yeah, the stuffing of the shoulder, everything like that, everything's standard. I also asked him about different grips. Some people teach the rear naked choke. Yeah, he said that's dog shit, and I have to agree. I think that when you do the rear naked choke grip and you do that turn technique that some people do, you just cause a neck crank. You're not really putting them to sleep. I don't really like that anymore, so I've stopped doing it. So he says pretty much gable grip or nothing, or you can finish it one-handed, which he does often. So yeah,
gamble. You know, know how you're gonna how you should test your head arm to see if it has improved. It's if you can tap Psycho Ben with it.
Oh, I think I could. Yeah. I think I definitely could.
So Psycho Ben's one of the. Well, he's almost 18 now, but geez, like,
shit, really?
Man, at this year's Christmas party, Psycho Ben will be old enough to come to the pub and drink beer with the team.
What?
It's just, yeah, man. So like,
wow.
I That's mean, Ben's crazy. Ben's been training for years. Started a different gym before with us, but he moved over to our gym pretty much when we opened. So probably when he was like. 14? Maybe even 13, pushing 14, or maybe it was 14, you know. And anyway, he's turned into this man child who is who doesn't lift or anything. He's super uncoordinated, but he's so strong. And we call him Psycho Ben because he's, you know, he doesn't actually go psycho, but he's if you tap, he's incredibly difficult to tap. Like he's just he'll.
He's stubborn.
He's super stubborn. Like man. But he's also super strong. Like breaking it, you're having him in an armbar and breaking his armbar grip, like, is really, really hard. Like, he'll just cop insane amounts of pressure. And anyway, if you can tap him with an arm triangle, then you know your arm triangle's good.
I definitely can.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we will. Anyway, so, you connect your hands, gable grip, you dismount to side control, and the cue that he uses in terms of where you put your weight, yes, you want to sprawl down, you know, into them, but you want to try and get your lat as low as theirs. So whenever I teach the head arm, normally I teach temple to temple, like head to head as the head cue. That will teach people to get their head low enough to have their pressure in the shoulder so it's driving into the neck. But this cue, lat to lat, also helps with the sprawl. So now I teach it with both. I say get your head to head to have your head position in the right spot, and then sprawl down lat to lat, and you want to sprawl into them. You can also have your knee up on their hip, and that stops them from doing that back roll escape or you know, having momentum with their hips. A lot of people like to finish this from mount or half guard to stop that back roll escape. I've actually pulled off that back roll escape fairly recently. It works. I like it. If they aren't trapping you down, it's you can do
it. If you don't know the escape, it's literally, in the simplest form, it's literally performing a back roll, which rolls you out of the head arm. But type it into YouTube, Instagram, just for head arm choke back roll or head arm choke escape. You'll find it.
I hadn't tried it before, but man, it works. Like I was in a head arm recently. I was testing it out. It works. But
testing it out. The old, I got myself here on purpose so I could try and escape. Sure.
Yeah, it was with Jacob. So, anyway. But the reason I really wanted to learn the head arm off of Jordan, because it's hard. I'm stubborn as well, like similar to the Psycho Ben. I don't tap to it normally. I can cop it pretty hard. And I mean, I was doing every defense I could. I was, you know, doing hold the phone, driving my arm up over my face to ruin the angle. But man, it didn't matter because his bite on my neck was so deep. And I think that's what a lot of people are missing, is focusing in on that bicep on your neck before you really give a shit about their shoulder into the other side. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a, unfortunately for me, it's not a detail that I think will change my head arm. It's just such a bad submission for me. And I've tried multiple times to fix it and asked multiple I was really interested to hear Jordan's details on it, but I don't know, I'm just going to continue to blame my long arm and lack of bicep that it just, I've struggled to close that gap. It's just not a good choke for me. And I mean, even if I'm executing it 100% perfectly from a technical point of view, you always have positions, techniques that work better for you than others, even if it's not a physical limitation, just some techniques resonate with you better and they just, I don't know, they just work for you. But man, I would really, you know, we spoke quite a bit outside of recording about the trip, and man, hopefully, you know, Jordan will find himself in this side of the world one day. Like,
he's coming to Australia.
Yeah, sick. So I'd look forward to training with him, and I'd like to pick his brain about, like I said in that other episode, I always like to ask people how they do. Yes, obviously techniques that I want to improve, but I also really like to ask other instructors how they do a technique that I already do, because if I can make that a little bit better, if you can, you can always get a little bit more of an edge. So if I've got my favorite technique that I feel I already do really well, if someone can add another deal to another detail to that, you know, and I feel like, you know, as someone who doesn't, I don't necessarily follow Jordan's content. Like, I don't think I'm necessarily the target audience. I've seen some of the reels that have been popping up now that I guess are already dropping from your time there, because the main purpose of the trip was to work with him and help produce content for him and film and all this stuff. So I've already seen a bunch of the reels like coming through, and I don't think I'm necessarily the target audience. Like, some of the reels that have recently been popping up are like, you know, tip to not get triangled, or tip to finish your triangle or something. And very, I don't want to say very basic tips. They're really good tips, right? Really good fundamental details. So I don't necessarily watch a lot of his content, but the stuff that I do see and the stuff that I watch, because, you know, I know that you're in it or whatever, and from speaking with you, dude knows his shit, and I'd love to get to be on the mats with him and share ideas and train with him and, you know, and feel his fucking body triangle, bro.
Waivers. Everyone sign in waivers. Everyone sign in release clauses.
Jordan, here's I've got a challenge for you. How's this, bro? Not only do I bet that you can't tap me with your body triangle, I bet you can't even lock it up because I'm a fat piece of shit, bro. you're not even gonna be able to close your body triangle on me, my man. Right.
Jordan just took that personally.
Jordan's like, that's it. I'm getting fucking shin extensions. I'm coming for you.
You'll have to get your back first, right? So
I mean that's bro, you can't get my back, Jordan, if I pull side control, bro. We used to do that. We had a running joke in Brazil. During my time in Brazil was when, for people who were following competitive jiu-jitsu at this time, before your time, Kieran, no, but for people who were following jiu-jitsu at the time, that the Miao brothers, so Paulo and João Miao and Keenan Cornelius were coming up. Those three like battled all through purple and brown. When they were purple belts is when they fully broke on the scene. Mm. And it was all bearing bolos and 50-50. Mm. And a lot of the guys from my gym would fight the Miao brothers because their gym is also in São Paulo, or their gym at the time. So at the Paulista, which was our like local competition, if you will, which was still massive, right? Like it was huge. Like, this is a, you know, so guys like Marigali would have come up competing the Paulista circuit, the Miao brothers, like a lot of the big athletes who come out of São Paulo, the city, or even the state to some degree, São Paulo, fight this circuit. And so heaps of my training partners fought the Miao brothers and everything, and which often resulted in getting bearing boloed. And so we used to have a joke that like the match would start and you would just straight away just like pancake to flat on your back, like side control, and be like, bolo me now, motherfucker. You were just like,
they still would.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, you speak to Jordan more than me. So man, obviously, yeah, let me know if he comes to Australia, and I'll try tee up to not be going in for surgery at the time.
Oh, I thought you were about to say, I'll try tee up to not be in the country.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, I'm actually currently waiting to hear from my knee surgeon whether I have to have a follow-up. So I'm 4 months post knee surgery, and long story short, the surgery went well, but it didn't solve the underlying problem. And
that's
so
concerning,
So I'm now pushing, and this was a knee issue that went for 12 months pre-surgery. I'm 4 months post-surgery. So if I don't have this fixed soon, we're pushing 18 months of this one. I should post a reel so people can see what I'm dealing with, the amount of fluid, and this is ridiculous, the amount of fluid that's in my knee. It's literally like a waterbed. When you poke my knee, it just jiggles full of fluid. And anyway, so I'll try and make sure I'm, depending how I'm feeling, whether I'm in surgery or out of surgery when he comes, you know. Yeah. But yeah, Jordan, I challenge you to even close a body triangle on my fat ass.
Yeah, you gotta start bulking. Like, Jordan's coming in like 12 months and you just start fucking bulking, boys. You're gonna be like 150 kilos by the time it rocks up, 300 pounds. Let's go.
And then I win because he blows out his knee trying to close the body triangle. I'm like, victory.
Oh, shit.
Sweden. Yeah. Or if you.
Or.
If you quickly open one of the other tabs on your computer for me, Kieran, maybe.
Yep. You've been sending me like covert fucking WhatsApp messages like to keep everything going. But not a bad idea. All right, so we'll leave it there today.
Yeah. So what we'll do, guys, because I just sent Kieran some messages of some dick pics and stuff. No.
No, it's just, I've got to go. There's something came up.
Just sending him some scheduling stuff. So guys, we might leave the episode here because, as per usual, 20 minutes talking about steroids. But yep.
Classic.
But yeah, again, man, like I assume there's going to be way more content coming from your trip from Jordan.
Yeah, I've got seven videos in the bank.
Yeah, so both on his channel and on your channel /Instagram. Are there going to be, give us a quick, what's a video that we could look forward to? Because so far, like I said, I don't watch a lot of Jordan stuff, but the stuff that you send me that I know you're in. So the reels pop up because of the algorithm, obviously. But his videos on his channel, I don't necessarily see. There was the MMA one with you. What's a video that people can look forward to seeing?
We did a role in gi, a role in no gi, and we did kickboxing sparring, which was way worse than MMA. I got my ass fucking handed to me. That's where I really got fucked up. But we have two roles and kickboxing. I'm not sure if he's publishing kickboxing, but I also got roles with Nikki, his wife, who is a brown belt.
Is she technical. The girl who I've seen in some of the reels? Is that her?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
That's
not Nikki. Okay. I got a role with Nikki, and I got a role with Alex, one of his very good brown belts, who is a fucking monster, and he manhandled me. So that's a video that's going to be on my channel. But
Did he let you film any roles with a gimme? Did he give you any she's one of my shit blue belts. Film a role with them.
I didn't want those roles, man. I didn't want to waste the hard drive space. No, kidding. No. I was picking my roles to get on film. I wanted Nikki because I wanted like a really technical, high level female to roll against, and I wanted to just get fucking manhandled by a beast. Alex was the man for that. Very graciously accepted to, to manhandle me for my YouTube channel. But the reason I went to Canada was to help Jordan not only produce the YouTube content, he doesn't really need help with that. He's doing fine just without me, but to produce a course that's coming out. So think of it like a super instructional. It's coming out in a few weeks where we're working our asses off behind the scenes to get it all sorted. Even now I'm working on it with him, and it's going to be released very soon. It's a BJJ theory course. So for those that do watch Jordan's content and follow his channel progress, you'll notice that, you know, the last 6 months he's had a bit of a shift in his teaching style to be more aligned with theories and concepts rather than techniques and specific like systems or what have you. So it's a more broad
approach. Dare I say, is it a little bit ecological?
No. So ecological.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, a bit different. Yeah, he does like the ecological, air quote, ecological approach in terms of the games that he uses some of the warm-ups, same as what we do. It's just positional. He's not really an ecological, he doesn't really have that style across the board. He just uses it as a tool in his toolbox. But yeah, the BJJ theory course is, you know, I'm really excited about it. It's going to be fucking awesome. But
sick. Yeah. All right. Well, man, yeah. Look forward to him coming, as we say, down under one day. But yeah, man, sounds like a good trip. Let's leave it there, guys. Next episode, we guaranteed going to talk about the trip to Sweden. But as always, you can catch us on Instagram, where we never post anything, but but that's where you can easily message us directly. You know, same at beyondjujitsu_podcast, yada, yada, yada. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.